Hi, this is Bonnie Gillespie, and you're tuned in to The Work.
Y'all, thank you so much for joining me for this episode of The Work. You're probably going to hear a little more Southern accent from me than usual, and it's because my girl Clark Cerullo is on the podcast with me today. Welcome, Clark.
Hi, how are you?
So glad you're here. Thank you so much for joining us. And the reason I bring up the Southern accent of it all is because I can already hear it coming out in me when I am having conversations with people who are Atlanta-based actors. And of course, that's where I grew up. And so it all kind of comes rushing back. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Bonnie. I'm so happy to be here.
So Clark, let's start with just a little intro. Could you let folks know a little bit about who you are and your creative journey? Basically, take us up to the point where you first encountered self-management for actors and my work. But obviously, you had been working as an actor before that. Take us through a little bit, please.
I have. Well, my journey first began, I think that my spark and my interest in just this industry, period. I thought when I was a little girl, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that I was going to grow up and be a fashion model. That was what I wanted to do. And so I would pose, and I would wear my mom's high heels, and I would cut out pictures of, you know, the famous supermodels like Christy Turlington and Claudia Schiffer. I'd paint a little mole on my face like Cindy Crawford and do all of that. And so as I got a little bit older, I was growing fast. I was about 5'4" in the fourth grade, which is like 9 or 10 years old. And so I thought that was a good sign, but I'm still 5'4". So the modeling dream didn't quite come true, but that was okay. I had a great upbringing, got to dab into the modeling a little bit, and then got introduced to a little bit of commercial work then very young. And then I went to college and I got a job in marketing after college. And through that, I dabbed a little bit in radio and, again, commercial, and had some exposure to on-camera stuff, and it just became very clear to me very quickly that the path that I was supposed to take was in the field of acting, and that was what was going to make me happy. Nothing else was really going to quite fit. So after that, I kind of just gave up everything to pursue this, and I've never looked back. So I did move to Atlanta. And I was born and raised in Marietta, which is right outside of Atlanta. So it was definitely like coming home, and I was so excited that the industry was kind of popping here. And I set my sights on an agent, and I did not have the material that I needed to go to them yet. So that was when I began my hustle. And I just tried to contact as many production companies as I could to try and collect some foot to work for them, try to collect some footage to be able to get together a demo. And that's what I did. And then when I had enough to go to the agency that I was targeting, I was able to get in there and sign with them. And I'm about to have my 7-year anniversary with them next week. So very happy about that.
Congratulations.
So, but after I signed with them, that was really when, obviously, the work really began. That was when I started going out for auditions, and I always thought I would fit more into the commercial side. It was a really pleasant and wonderful surprise when I really took to the TV and film aspect of the business, and I just really fell in love with that. I still love commercials, too. I enjoy any work that I can get, but I really loved the TV and film side of things, and that was a surprise to me, so that was really great. But as I started booking in TV and film, that was when I just kept having more and more and more questions. And you know where I'm going with this. I needed info, and I needed detailed info. And you know me, I'm very detail-oriented. And a lot of times it wasn't that I wasn't getting amazing information from my agents, my coaches, and my peers. It wasn't that. It was just that I wasn't getting the info that I was craving. I wanted to know specifically how should I approach these casting directors, and how should my resume look, and how should my demo look, and all of these things. And especially after I booked Sell, which was the biggest opportunity in my career thus far, I just thought, okay, I'm coming off of something really big that I really want to capitalize on. So I started reading and your name just kept popping up in different areas. And so I was able to find your book. And when I started reading your book, that was when, just kind of with every page turn, I was getting those questions answered. And I completely reworked all of my material, everything that I had. And it changed things for me. It, number one, it gave me more control over, which this is a business that it's so hard to feel like you're in control at any point in time. But that gives you more control when you know that you're covering all the bases there. So I did that. And then shortly after that, you spoke in Atlanta. And I got to meet you. And I fanned out. I was so excited to meet you. And I was. Do you remember that? I was so excited.
I totally remember that.
Do you remember that? I was like, oh, my gosh. I was so excited because it was such a weird coincidence to me that I had just kind of found your material and I had just started studying you and really putting your practices into work. And then I passed by my agent, Misty's office, and she said, oh, Clark, I don't know if you've ever heard of her, but Bonnie Gillespie is going to be speaking next week in case you'd like to go. And I was like, oh, my God, yes, I will be there. So I was there.
Well, and the amazing Misty fun fact was one of my very first agents when I lived and worked in Atlanta. And so she and I go way back, and obviously her mother before that was my agent. And it was so funny because she actually came up to me, I don't know if you know this, the day of that talk that I did in Atlanta and said, I have one very special client I'm really excited for you to meet. And she said, I want you to meet everybody, obviously, because I think they're all special or I wouldn't have signed them. But I'm really excited about Clark and what she's got coming up. So I want to make sure that y'all talk. So if you could have a little extra time at the end. And I was like, oh, no, I'll stay and do meet and greet and Q&A. And it's totally fine. And she's like, I know, but I want you to look out for her specifically. So I don't know if you knew that she had put you on my radar as well.
I didn't. She's so fantastic.
Isn't she great?
And then, she's amazing. She has been, I'm so proud of the fact that she's been with me from the very, very beginning of this. That Houghton has been my only agent. The only agency I've been with. I had laser focus on them from the start. I never went anywhere else. I never pursued anyone else. I knew I trusted my instincts, which I think is very important to do. And my instincts consistently told me that Houghton was the agency for me. And so I followed it, and, you know, she's been with me from the beginning, and there's always ebbs and flows in this business, period. And so she's seen me through all the ups and downs and the relationship, just like any relationship, it develops more and more over the years. And I feel very fortunate, and I'm in a very good place. So I'm very happy.
Question for you on that. This sort of takes us in a little tangent, but I want to on this, because the loyalty I can hear from everything you're saying feels really important, really valuable to you. And I totally get that. I feel like I'm a lifer with the people that I sign on with as well. And I want to know, have there been moments when these ebbs and flows that you speak of have happened that you've questioned, oh, do I need a more powerful agent? Should I strategize to move up to the bigs? You know, I need someone who's got a bigger presence in LA or New York or London. I mean, does any of that ever come into play, or are you just so sure?
Right. Well, I think that's pretty natural when any actor has low points in their career. They go, oh, my God, okay, who can I blame? And the agent is the scapegoat.
For sure.
Always, because that's like the first one that you go to. But the thing is, you have to understand, and I learned this through you as well, you have to understand what the agent's role is. And the agent's role is to get you in the doors, the correct doors, and get you in more doors, and to negotiate your rates. So when you look at it like that, you have to ask yourself, okay, am I getting indoors? And if you're getting indoors, then you need to just continue to push forward and evaluate maybe, okay, if this casting director keeps calling me back, maybe there just isn't a part for me. You know, maybe. But if you're not getting in the doors, then maybe you should evaluate your relationship with your agent, but always have that conversation with them first. I think that so many people leave too soon or make an impulsive choice, and that's not what you should do, because especially in the Southeast, the casting directors are the casting directors, and a lot of the agents have been around long enough to have relationships with those casting directors. So what you really need to make your goal needs to be, who do I connect with the most? who do I feel is the best fit for me? Because they all know the same people. So I think that you have to look at, okay, are my materials in good shape? Am I putting out good work when I get, when I get auditions? Have I fallen off this person's radar? Pretty much everything you talk about in your book. But yeah, I think that it's natural for the agent to be the first one that the actor wants to blame, and it really shouldn't be. It just simply shouldn't be.
I love that mindset, Clark. I think that's absolutely lovely and a really good reminder that, yeah, there are times when the problem is the representation, but that's got a different set of symptoms.
Yes.
And I like that you're so clear on that. And, of course, that's why you've got such a long and healthy relationship with Misty and the whole team over there at Houghton. Can you talk us through how Cell came into your life and exactly what that is for those of us who are not yet aware of what we're about to all become aware of in the coming weeks?
I'm very excited. Cell was my first. Cell, it's a movie. It's a Stephen King movie. Cell is a Stephen King movie coming out July 8th, I believe. It is July 8th. And Cell was my first opportunity to have a supporting role in a major motion picture. So I'm so honored and I'm so excited and so thankful for the opportunity. Chase Paris and Tara Feldstein were the ones that cast me in that, and it was just unbelievable. And so the way that it started was this was around the holiday season. So I had auditioned before the holidays, and, then there's the callback and then there's the waiting. So it was waiting even longer than usual because it was stretched out over holidays. So I really had kind of let it go. Like I had not booked it. I knew that I was in consideration, but I had let it go and thought that maybe it was over. But no, it was just another another thing that takes a long time in this business. There are no rules. Sometimes you'll get booked immediately, and then sometimes things drag on, and that's another thing that actors have to just kind of accept and get over because there's no set of rules there. But anyway, so I was cast in it, and I was able to work with Samuel L. Jackson and John Cusack, and it was just an incredible opportunity. And my character plays John Cusack's character's wife, so it was just an amazing opportunity to be exposed to him and to kind of absorb some of his experience and just to watch him. He's such an amazing and seasoned actor, and so is Samuel L. Jackson too as well, of course. But it was incredible. It's just something that I'm so thankful for, and I'm very excited about it finally coming out.
What do you treat the set like when you have an opportunity like that and you're looking around going, oh my God, these are people that I've seen in movies for decades at this point. They've been working forever since even before I got into this. And how do you treat that time of sharing space on set? I hear some people talk about how, their process is one, and this is where I want to talk craft a little bit. Their process is such that they remove themselves from the space so they can stay focused in their character, and others are like a sponge for being on set and picking up as much as they can from these other folks. What is your process like once you're on that kind of set?
I'm definitely a sponge. I have, I'm very focused on my character and, of course, my job, and I can get into more of that in a little bit, but I definitely am a sponge under all circumstances, no matter what situation I'm in. And I think that kind of started when I first had my first job or anything. 99.999% of actors, what's their first job? They're extra. So, but right after my first extra job, I was able to, with this wonderful man, Patrick Ingram, hired me to be a stand-in for Amber Heard on the entire project of The Joneses that was shot here several years back with David Duchovny and Demi Moore. And for those 6 weeks, I was on that set every single day, and I kept my mouth shut, my eyes and ears wide open. And at that point, I was around, and I'd never been exposed to any kind of fame whatsoever in that kind of context. So at that point, I was able to learn set etiquette, learn terminology, watch how people interacted, how the actors interacted with the crew, how the actors interacted with each other and the directors, and it was such an education, and it truly just changed, I think, how I would, had I not had that experience, I don't know how, I mean, I'm sure I still would have been a sponge because that's kind of who I am but it was such an education to teach me how to be comfortable on a set and to kind of know what to expect. And I carry that with me and always did thereafter because like I'd had that experience. So I definitely, every time I have the opportunity to be around a big successful actor, I don't get intimidated. I get, number one, very thankful. And then number two, I just want to absorb what I'm able to witness from them and not let it pass me by.
I love that. That's an absolutely beautiful approach to all of it. It brings me to a question, and you could speak to this about the Southeast market in general, if you want, specifically, or you could speak to it more in general terms. Do you think it's a smart idea to do background work, to offer yourself up as a stand-in? Are these things that you feel really can give you the upper hand when it comes to scripted acting work, principal acting work?
At the beginning of your career, at the very beginning of your career, before you've had a job, you need to get on set some way. And if you're going to be an extra, which most actors, I mean, it's very rare if an actor hasn't done at least one extra job, but at the beginning of your career, to get on set is very valuable, but don't misunderstand it. It's not a social time. I didn't look at it that way. I went there to learn. I went there to know, okay, I'm going to be an extra today. I'm not going to be an extra for the rest of my life. That's not the goal. So it's to learn, and it's not to act goofy or unprofessional or try and get numbers, you know, whatever. But it's something that I always took very seriously. So I did an extra job, and then I did the stand-in, and that was right there at the beginning. After that, I was ready to pursue representation. I wasn't ready to keep doing that. I felt like I had gotten what I needed from that, what it's for, what the experience is for. Now, when you get into other work, like SAG extra work on commercials, you should always do that because you can get upgraded, and then the next thing you know, you're a principal on a SAG commercial. So that's a different story. All actors do that. But when it's a film extra or when it's a low-budget extra, that should be a one or two, maybe three-time thing to get experience, not to continue. But it is extremely helpful before you've had any exposure because you don't just walk into this business and get to the top or get to a part immediately. You have to take baby steps.
I love this. And thank you, because that perspective, I think, is one that gets glossed over. People either feel like, oh, well, once you've done extra work, you're tainted and you're a career extra and that's your new life and you can never go back from it. So don't do it or hide that you do it. And I think that the way you've spoken about it makes perfect sense, which is it's how you do it and when you do it and the awareness of while you're doing it, that this isn't going to be the thing that you always do. Not that there's anything wrong with those folks who are career extras and who've chosen that is the daily work that they want. There are plenty of people who make a very good living doing nothing but background and stand-in work, and they make their insurance, and they get great benefits because they're doing that as a full-time job. So, but that's a different culture as well. I agree, though, with what you're saying about the when it's the low-budget indies, when it's the one-off project here or there, go in, get that experience so that you're able to say, okay, now I know what the set culture is like, and then take that information and let it fuel you to the next tier and be very clear on what those tiers are.
Exactly.
What else do you have coming up? Because I don't know how much you can talk about one of the bookings that I know about, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you can share a little bit.
I think I can. It's I won't say too much about what the character is, but this is a CBS show, The Inspectors. It's a award-winning Saturday morning show. It's the part of the Dream Team, and it's a great, great show. And I was able to book a reoccurring guest spot on it that I'm very proud of and very excited about. So that's what I've been working on. And it shoots in Charleston, South Carolina, which I lived there for 6 years. So it's been a lot of fun to go back to my second hometown a little bit, and it's been wonderful. So I'm very grateful for that experience, and Matt Zefik is the wonderful angel that booked me on that. So I'm very grateful to him. But it's just a really great crew, wonderful directors, and I hope they keep asking me back.
Yeah, oh, of course. It's so much fun to be recurring. Fantastic. And I love that what I've heard you do now a couple times in this interview is give credit to the person that cast you. I think generationally we're seeing a shift where that's happening more and more. And it makes me really happy because I'll do things like watch, you know, the Oscars and the Golden Globes, and I'm listening for when are they thanking the casting director? When are they thanking, you know, they're getting up and doing acceptance speeches, and when do they thank the casting director that put them on that set, or the director or the second AD that was their friend that got them on the radar, you know, all the different people who are involved in making success happen. And I'm starting to hear more and more folks really give that shout out. And I think it starts with you and your loyalty for your team and Misty and the team over at Houghton, obviously, but also that you're clearly aware of these relationships that you're building in casting and the value of being brought in the room repeatedly and having that fan base, even when there aren't bookings coming, because you know where it can head. And is it for you more about the relationships than results? Would that be an accurate way of describing it?
Absolutely, because there was, and you know this, because you and I have been, you know, working together for almost 2 years now. You know, last year was very difficult for me. I was auditioning, but I wasn't getting the booking. But I was getting auditions, and these same wonderful people kept bringing me in, trying to find a fit. I just didn't fit. And it is about the relationships, because having those relationships builds a future of more auditions, and they know the work that you put out. And every time that I would look at it, is every time I was auditioning, I needed to make sure that I was giving them my very, very best stuff, which you should anyway at all times. But, you know, I was so aware of that, because even if I didn't book it, I needed to be okay with that, because I needed to create, I needed to have them continue to see the content that I was putting out there, so that when something was right for me, they would know that I could do the work. And I mean, that's exactly what happened, because after I went through that slow time, now it's picked back up again. So it truly is about those relationships. 100%.
Great perspective. Love that. Let's talk about balance, because obviously you've got a great business head for all of this. You know what the hustle is. You were long on the hustle before you and I intersected, because you knew, okay, I've got to get my materials in great shape before I even try to approach representation, and I want to be very clear on whom I want to represent me. And you were very strategic from the beginning. That business sense, and then, of course, the ups and downs, as you mentioned, that, you know, in the past year, maybe a little drier spell here and there. What is it that you do or that you practice to keep yourself balanced in this pursuit?
Well, there's always going to be ups and downs. So I think that that's something that you just need to really practice and be aware of, because if you don't recognize that, then you're just in a constant state of frustration. This business is hard. It's never claimed to be easy. It's never claimed to be always successful. That's just not how it goes. And you have to be willing to stick it out. So one thing that I always tell myself, because I mean, last year was slow. The 2 years before were higher than the year before that was slow. So, you know, I know that even when I have, this might be a fantastic year. This has been an amazing year so far. Does that mean that it won't slow down at some point? No, it definitely will slow down at some point. That's just the nature of the game. And I'm prepared for that. And like we all should, I'll get over it. But I think that one thing that I say to myself when things are slow, so funny, I just kind of snap myself out of it, and I go, it's not like you're never going to work again. And it's not, and every actor should say that to themselves. It's not like you're never going to work again. So you're not, it's dry right now. It's not like you're never going to work again. And I think that reminding myself that makes it easier, so then I can, you know, focus on something else or do something else, or, you know, maybe do something completely unrelated to acting to unwind. You know, I like to cook. I'm not very good at it. Sometimes I'm asked to stop, but I'll but you know, try cooking. And of course, the normal things. I work out. I eat right. Those are important things. I mean, they sound cliche, but those do help your mental state as well.
For sure.
But just remind yourself that, you know, you're going to work. And every time you do get an audition, just really dig in and, you know, enjoy it and put your very best work out. And that's That's the best advice I can give on staying balanced. But always remind yourself you're going to work again. Just don't quit. As long as you don't quit.
Right on. Tell us where we can find information about you, keep up with what you've got coming up and the next bookings that come down the road, and just what's your one-stop shop for being in touch with folks?
Well, I really enjoy my website, clarkcerullo.com. That's a big place for me. I try, you know, my struggles with social media. It's just, I'm trying, but it is so hard to make that my thing. But I am on Facebook. I am on Twitter. It might look kind of sad, but you can find me there for sure. And that's at Clark Cerullo, and then Clark Cerullo on everything pretty much. So that's how.
And let's talk about that a quick little bit, because I don't know if social networking has to be a requirement of a creative career. A lot of people will make you think that it does, but mm-hmm. I think as long as you're Googleable, I can find you. You've got a website that
right.
you like keeping updated. I can, you know, check out your reel and find out who reps you and where to go if I need you on something. Does that feel like it's enough, or do you still feel the pressure to, I don't know, tweet or whatever?
I mean, I don't know. I really don't allow myself to feel the pressure, because it's just not it's so against the grain for me. So I will do it, and I'm open to, it's kind of like, for me, I'm consistently trying to make it better, and maybe one day it'll click and I will absolutely fall in love with it. But as far as my work, as far as it affecting my work, I don't feel like it has kept me from working. I don't feel like not having an incredibly strong presence on Facebook has kept me from working. It definitely creates a bigger fan base. And I really admire the people that are very good at social media and that enjoy it. Like I said, maybe one day I'll turn into one of those people. At this time, I am not. But at the same time, you know, I do what I can. I do little bits here and there. But I definitely love my website as far as keeping up with things that I'm doing. And, you know, you can Google me and find out all kinds of stuff, I'm sure. But as far as, you know, like my content, not anything bad. It's all acting related. So I don't know. But I do have a presence on Facebook and Twitter.
So let's do a quick little bit of brand prov. You ready?
Sure.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So what is your dream role?
Okay, do you remember, this would have been my dream role, do you remember Emily Thorne in Revenge, that kind of role where it's like a mysterious, kind of maybe not appearing what you seem, but to go towards the goal, and I think that those kind of roles fit me. When I look at my bullseye exercises and when I look at what people have said about me, the thing that kept popping up consistently, and the stuff that I can, the words that I can see in my materials that pop up and roles that I've played, has been, you know, mysterious, maybe has a secret, strong, those kind of words. So I think that a role like that would be so cool.
Very cool. I like it.
So cool.
All right, you are walking through life. There's a soundtrack playing. What is your on-brand theme music?
On-brand theme music. You know what? I couldn't think of any other song besides Wild Horses, Rolling Stones. That's been my favorite song since I was a tiny little girl, so I can't even imagine that there would be another one. I don't know.
I know it was for you.
I'm trying to think of how it would fit brand wise, but that's my song.
I kind of love it. I know I've got my brow furrowed right now, and I'm going, hang on, let me see
that's
if I
song.
Can make it work. But it works. Okay. Ooh, cool. All right, and you are on the red carpet, getting an amazing opportunity, whether it's at a festival or award show. And who are you wearing?
Oh, who am I wearing? I don't know. That's I need to get better with this label. Maybe Oscar de la Renta. That's a good one, right? Is that a good
timeless
one?
Classic, absolutely.
That's a timeless sure. classic.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I'll have to work on that question. I'll have to come up with a could change
that's
based
who I would
on
say.
Yeah, where we are and what's in fashion. There may be, you know, something that's a little more modern that you want to try or whatever that, you know, it could just change.
That was literally the only name I could think of. So I don't even know if I could see a dress.
You got to do some, with what you got coming up over
so that will be
weeks,
one brand yeah. prov. Yeah, that will be a brand prov question that I work on.
Okay, you got to work on that. Great. And a final question on brand prov is of all the networks and distribution entities out there, if you had to pick one as your brand home base, the place where the stories that you're most likely to tell would live, what would it be?
Okay, I'm between two. I've been on the USA Network 3 times, and that has been telling right there. So mm-hmm. I think that one is a good fit for me. I love FX and Showtime. Those would be on brand for me as well, I think. But as far as like today, I'd say that USA Network is a great fit for me.
I like that you've got a few because even though I said what's the one, honestly, we've got one that it can be our edgier version of ourselves and then another that
right.
can be the warmer, sunnier version of ourselves. And I think that works for you, both of those, all three rather that you mentioned. Let's end with go back in time and tell younger you one piece of advice that you hope that anybody who's a young actor coming up listening to might also benefit from.
Trust your instincts always. And I've been pretty good about that, but always trust your instincts. If something doesn't fit, change it. I think that I was very lucky to trust myself and to start becoming to make the acting dream happen. Like, you know, even though I knew it was going to be hard, I'm so happy that I trusted myself and that I went for it, because I think so many times people think whatever their dream is, not just acting, but whatever their dream is, oh, I don't know. And then the next thing you know, their 30 years is gone.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot. So I'm really happy that I've trusted my instincts, and that would be the advice that I would give anyone anytime, just to really trust yourself, because you know when something doesn't fit. I mean, you know, it doesn't feel right. And through all the hardship of acting, which there's a lot of it, it's always fit.
I love that, because it's one of the things I say about this creative journey. You know, we're artists, and that means our gut, our instincts, you know, they're at the core of so much of what we do creatively, yet we find ways to dishonor that and to not trust it. And I never really understand why, because it's such a big part of our creative process. It should be a big part of our decision-making process as well. It's that instant yes, instant no. There's a reason it feels so strongly one way or the other. And I like this advice a lot, and I hope others do too. So thank you, Clark.
Me too. Thank you, Bonnie.
So happy to have shared this time with you. You're wonderful. Remind everybody one last time your website address, please.
ClarkCerullo.com.
Awesome.
All right, my friends, this has been Bonnie Gillespie for another episode of The Work. Thank you so much for joining me here. Please join me over at BonnieGillespie.com for all sorts of goodness between episodes. And until next time, stay ninja.